And now, you're tuned into RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Dobb, along with my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, an eventful week. More eventful than I think I was expecting. And a lot of buzz.
Yeah, a lot of buzz. I mean, I don't know if you've heard. I'm really gutted. I'm really sad about this, that one of our faves, one of the greatest of all times, someone that we love and adore is no longer going to be going out there doing stuff for us every day anymore. Have you heard about this?
I'm not sure if I have.
John Cena's retired, man.
That is true. He has.
John Cena's hanging up the boots. And that's a sad day. Known Rays supporter.
Yes.
John Cena. We've seen him with the foam finger and the Rays hat. So I just want to give a salute to one of the best to do it. I hope I didn't bait you into thinking it could have been someone else, right? There was no one else that's like
on the team. No one else. Speaking of controversy, just we'll do a quick WWE 30 seconds here. Opinion on him tapping out. I know that was a bit controversial.
I think it only would have happened if John Cena wanted that to be the ending. I don't think anyone would have forced that finish upon him, and it would have been John's call. And if that's what he wanted to do, I get it. I think one, it sucks. Two, it's smart.
Yeah.
One, it sucks because John Cena's whole character was never give up, right? And he like never tapped out in his whole career. Mm-hmm. So it sucks that he tapped out, because that implies that he will give up, even if it is for his last match, that he gave up. And like, you could argue that it would be way more fitting of him to like he was in a sleeper hold, so he could have passed out,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then they could have done the finish. Like, he gave everything he had and he couldn't have given anymore, and he passed out.
Yeah.
I think that would have fit his character more, but like, I think the secret thing that they're going for is, I know you're not a big WWE guy, but the thing that they're going for is the guy that beat him, Gunther, was handed a really, really damaging loss at WrestleMania earlier this year where he tapped out. To the point where even now, like 7-8 months later, the crowd still chant at him, you tapped out every time he comes out. So that now he's tapped out John Cena, he has a weapon to fight against that long term. Yeah. So that chant can't really phase him now, because he goes, well, I tapped out John Cena, so screw you guys. So I think that might be the secret plan to try and get that monkey off his back, which that's still sucks though, because that's like damage repair for a stupid mistake they made earlier in the year. Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for non-Rays talk, because frankly, we've got a jam-packed show today. We've got all kinds of buzz and rumors to go into, and we've also got to break down the rotation from last year. We've got some strong opinions. Some of the guys that pitched for us last year. So if you've got some strong opinions, or you'd like to throw out some thoughts on any of what we're talking about, do us a huge favor and hop on over to YouTube and drop a comment. We'd love to hear from you guys. If you are a returning viewer, we really appreciate you guys. Do us a huge favor and drop a subscribe or a follow. It's free, just helps us out so much. If this is your first time joining us, you're in for a good show, and we appreciate you being here, because we're going to hop directly into it. Going over, you know, first of all, you know, we've got lots of rumors to discuss, but let's talk about some things that are confirmed. And maybe one of the more impactful things that could happen this offseason is the Rays getting a great outcome out of the draft lottery and getting the second overall pick. Like, Pat, just help contextualize for us just how big of a deal this is.
Oh, it's a huge deal. The Rays are one of the big winners from the draft lottery that took place earlier this week. For anyone that doesn't know how it works, because it's still fairly recent, I think this is only its third or fourth year in its current iteration. Essentially, now the worst team does not automatically get the number one pick. You are now entered into a lottery where the worst team has the greatest odds of receiving the number one pick, but could fall as low as, I think, seventh. So it's there's a lot of movement. For example, the Rays last year, I believe, were kind of the 11th worst team, and therefore were kind of would be due the 11th pick, but actually fell lower than that because of other teams getting picked in the lottery higher than them. Meanwhile, this year, the Rays were kind of set to be the 7th worst team in baseball, or the 7th most likely to receive the number one pick. They had 3% odds to receive the number one pick. Meanwhile, the White Sox had, I think, about 27% odds of the number one pick. And it came down to the Rays and the White Sox for the number one pick. And the favorites ended up taking number one, but the Rays moved up from what was a projected number 7 to number 2, which is a huge deal for them to get such a high pick in the draft. That's massive. I mean, like we always say, picking one is like the best possible outcome, but picking two, like you get almost your pick of the bunch.
Yeah. I mean, you like Bobby Witt Jr., you like Hunter Green, you like Alex Bregman, Chris Bryant, maybe not so much, Byron Buxton, Justin Verlander, some pretty good dudes that have been picked second overall. There's going to be some very good talent available. And, you know, this is all, you know, a little bit kind of, you know, preemptive. We'll get into it more, obviously, as the draft approaches. There are two guys, one a college shortstop, one a prep shortstop, that are both considered the two top options. Still too early to say exactly who will be the number one overall pick. The leaning is towards the college shortstop. So we'll, you know, stay tuned for that because we're going to have more to say on that as we get closer to the draft. But it's going to be a great opportunity to add a very high value prospect and someone who, like I mentioned, so a lot of those guys that I mentioned, guys that have affected the major league roster very soon after getting drafted. So it'll be exciting to be drafting somebody that we can be talking about regularly almost as soon as he's drafted because he's going to have a chance to affect the major league roster.
Yeah, 100%. And it's that thing, isn't it, where the difference between a number one, number two type pick in the draft to a number 15 in the draft, there is actually a pretty massive difference, I think,
yeah,
in those like that upper echelon of players, like those top three, even compared to other first rounders a lot of the time. Roch Chalowski is that college shortstop that you were talking about. He seems to be kind of consensus number one pick at the moment, but again, things can change. And the top kind of high school shortstop is a guy called Grady Emerson. And most people would project Emerson to the Rays right now. But again, we've got a whole kind of college and high school season still to play before the dust settles this. But keep an eye on those two names in particular. There's also the third best projected prospect in the draft. It's called LeBron, Justin LeBron. So if the Rays draft LeBron, you know, that could be a whole thing.
That could be a whole thing. We'll definitely get some coverage on that.
Yeah, the Rays have drafted LeBron. But
the decision part three. No.
He's taking his talent to St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg for now.
Yeah. But it's still huge news. It's huge news for the Rays to kind of overperform their projections in the draft lottery. I'm going to put 100% of the blame for that on Brett Phillips, who was the Rays representative at that draft. Because he brings good vibes and unpredictable good things.
He does.
Yeah, and he's chaotic good.
Good to see him, too. Good to see him again. I'm not sure exactly what he's going to be up to in the future, but I hope that he comes back around the Rays sometime in the future because it's just good. It's good to see him around the Rays.
Yeah. I mean, last I heard from him was that he tried to recreate himself as a pitcher in the Yankees farm. But I think he's given up on that dream. I think he's officially retired now.
I think so. Yeah.
But he was a big support. He was like very much like go Rays in the draft lottery. I think he's a Ray at heart no matter what.
Yeah. We appreciate him. Somebody else who is now a Ray on their uniform, if maybe not at heart, well, no, I guess we'll find out, is Steven Matz. A name that is like decently like a well-known name. He's Been around for a while, most well known for pitching with the Mets, had been with the Cardinals the last couple of seasons, got traded during last season, and he is now a Tampa Bay Ray. What are your expectations for how he's going to be used? Because there's been some conversation based on the salary that he got, which is a $7 million deal, or $7.5 average on a two-year $15 million deal, which would seem to indicate starting pitching. But based on some of his recent performances, he was more of a reliever. So where do you think that leaves him joining the Rays?
Yeah, I think it is interesting. I raised my eyebrows when we first signed him because I was like, he's just transitioned into being a reliever. Because he was kind of a decent starter with the Mets in his first few years with the Cardinals. But yeah, last year he kind of lost his spot in the rotation and only started seven games. And then now he pitched 53 games last year, 51 of them in relief, and none of them long outings at all.
Yeah.
So I was like, why are we spending this much money on a reliever? But I think this is the Rays going to stretch him back out to be a starter again.
Yeah. Now the question I think might be is the expectation that he's going to start like for four innings, maybe, or five innings, maybe not like going super deep into games. Maybe it's an idea of a, you know, sort of a length, like guy who is not, you know, going to go six, but is going to give you some length to start and then pass it off to the bullpen. Could this be another guy that may be helping out Shane as he's coming back from his injury and they're trying to give him a little bit more support? Maybe he'll be a back end guy to back him up. There's still a lot of moving pieces with the rotation. We're not really sure. We've got some guys in the minors who could be affecting the major league roster. We've got some, you know, some names out there on the market that the Rays have been tagged to. Trades could still be going on. There's been some speculation if trades do happen that starting pitching may be a part of that. So a lot to unpack there with the rotation. But I agree with you. I think that he's going to find a way to be pitching, you know, maybe three and four innings and maybe longer. We'll see. Based on the contract, that definitely seems to be where the Rays are headed.
Yeah, and, you know, this feels a bit Zach Littell-like, where Littell was a starter and then only recently got converted to a reliever when the Rays got him, and then they very rapidly converted him back.
Yeah.
So they could very easily do that. And the thing that they'll like about Steven Matz is he pounds the zone. Mm-hmm. Very, very low walk percentage. He only walked 3.5% of guys last year, which is 99th like percentile. Yeah, really good at pumping the zone. He does not have he's not a stuff guy, okay? His fastball kind of, as a reliever, it went up a little bit in terms of average velocity than what it was in previous years. He kind of froze it around 94 miles an hour. But the main thing, and it's kind of a sinking fastball, so he doesn't strike out many guys, but he is really good at getting ground balls. He's really good at making soft contact. He's one of those types of pitchers, and I think that could be useful. The Rays love a guy that can just pound the zone, right? So him plus high ground balls, I think he could be, in theory, a bargain bucket Zach Littell replacement, because I know there was interest in Littell, Hauser, Eflin, those kind of innings eater guys. Mm-hmm. And maybe they think that Matz is kind of the best value for money innings on the market right now. So I don't know, unless they make a trade, which we'll probably talk about in a little bit. Unless they make a trade, I think this is the Hauser, Littell, Eflin type guy that they're getting as kind of best bang for your buck innings, where he'll get you 130, probably like between 110 and 130 innings.
Yeah, and remember, we're going to be back in this trop this coming season, mm-hmm. which again, Pitchers Park, which, you know, and again, we are a team that is traditionally prided ourselves on defense. We expect to have a good defensive team out there. Just in general, when you look at the guys, you know, as much as we've liked to, you know, as much as we've lamented sort of the lack of offense from the outfield, the defense is going to be good out there. You have a, you know, average to good third baseman. It's going to be an elite shortstop no matter who's out there. And then, you know, okay second base and pretty good first base play. So you're going to have good defense out there in general. And so these types of guys have always made sense for the Rays, and I think even more so now that we're back in the trap. So I think that's a really good comp to Zach Littell and some of these other guys that they've brought in the past couple of years. Excited to see what he does in a Rays uniform. The Rays always seem to unlock something with these types of guys. Excited to see it, but I definitely like that he's not walking guys, because that's kind of the Achilles heel of a lot of the Rays pitchers right now. Is there's a lot of walking going on right now.
Yeah, and I think that translates nicely into our kind of rotation review, player reviews for some guys in the starting rotation. Weirdly, we only had three guys that did kind of full seasons in the rotation for us this year, because Littell ended up leaving mid-season, Bradley ended up leaving mid-season, and then Hauser didn't end up pitching that much for us. He only pitched a couple months for us. So if we go by other games started, you got Joe Boyle in that mix, Ian Seymour in that mix. But let's talk about our main three, shall we? Let's talk about Ryan Pepiot, Shane Baz, and Drew Rasmussen.
Yes.
Is there a guy that you're crying out to talk about first?
I mean, I think there's one guy who's earned it, who, when we really needed some good performances, because as we're going to talk about with some of the other guys, there was some disappointing performances from the starting rotation, even though they were, you know, generally good. So we expected some steps forward, didn't get him. A guy that we were worried about going into the year, we were saying, is he going to be able to, you know, be a full starter, like with the injuries that he suffered in the past? Is he going to be able to be out there for the, you know, 120, 130 innings that we need? And Drew Rasmussen gave us 150, and he gave us 150 excellent innings, pitching to a 2.76 ERA. What a great season from Drew.
Yeah, you can tell that the Rays definitely came into this season with a hard cap of 150. But Rasmussen got to it, which I think is the most impressive thing. Yes. I don't know if we came into the season expecting him to come close to 150 innings. But yeah, he led the entire team, if you put position players and pitches together. He definitely led all pitches in WAR. I'll give him that much. Obviously, Junior and Yandy kind of usurped him from the position player standpoint. But he led all pitches in WAR. He was excellent in that regard. And a 2.76 ERA, which is outstanding. Okay, really outstanding. And just was the ace of a troubled staff. I think he was considered our stopper. You just knew he was going to come in, pitch five or six innings, give up like one or zero earned runs, and then dip. And that was, and he would do it so efficiently. That's the thing that I loved about him. He's a joy to watch because he works quickly in terms of pitch tempo, and he's so efficient. He will come in and he'll throw an inning in like seven pitches.
Yeah. And it wasn't always like, they weren't always by the strikeout. He was getting a lot of, you know, favorable ground balls, favorable fly ball results, and getting outs that way too, where I think in the past we've seen more strikeouts from him. That was significantly lower this year, but he found a way to be effective, and that efficiency was a key part of it. Just a really, like, I always felt like a very, like, ethical, enjoyable ball player to watch out there. Just got it done, got out there, got outs. Like, just really, you know, compared especially to the other guys on the staff who were just out there just throwing pitches, so many pitches. He's the guy who was out there getting in and out of games. Really, really a nice change of pace. And I'd be hard-pressed to know where this staff would have been without him this year.
Oh, it would be in a bad spot, I think. A real bad spot. Did you know that Drew Rasmussen had, by Baseball Savant's pitch value metrics, the most valuable fastball in baseball?
I could believe it. I could believe it.
Even though he throws kind of like a mid-90s kind of average four-seamer, he got the best results on his fastball of any other pitcher in the league. And that's talking about Aroldis Chapman. That's talking about Edwin Diaz. That's like, that's putting relievers in that conversation as well, who have, like, you know, Mason Miller. His fastball was getting the best results. And that's because, one, Drew Rasmussen's a bit of a kitchen sink guy. He only actually throws that fastball 35% of the time. He throws a cutter at it a lot, and he throws a sinker a lot as well. But then you occasionally throws in a sweeper. But the main thing is, because he throws three different types of fastball, one four seam, one cutter, one sinker, he does enough to keep the hitter guessing of which way the pitch is going to move, right? Is it going to move down a little bit? Is it going to move kind of out a little bit? He does enough of that that, like, it was enough to tempt hitters into swinging, but because of that late movement or lack of, if it's the four seamer and you get tricked, he was constantly missing barrels, right? And then inducing either weak contact or ground balls most of the time. So, he's been outstanding with just like little deceptions in what he was doing. Just little, is it going to be a sinker? Is it going to be a cutter? Is it going to be a four seam? Does just enough to invoke a swing, invoke some soft contact. Let's move on to the next guy. He does not care about the aesthetics of how he gets you out. He's just getting you out in like the most efficient way possible. And I love the way you put it. Ethical pitcher.
Yeah. And again, like as a hitter coming in to face Drew Rasmussen, you know, you're going to get the different kinds of fastball, and you know that the speed, there's some variation in the speed, but it's not a crazy variation in speed between those pitches. The four seam and the sinker are almost identical. The cutter does take a little bit off, but you know, despite all of that, you go in knowing what you're going to face, and he's still able to get those outs. And that just, again, speaks to his ability to locate his pitches. Just really impressive stuff from him this year. And there's no real reason to believe that he wouldn't be able to replicate this next year. You know, he's not, you know, as from an age perspective, he's only in his age 29 season. I don't know that he's going to pitch a whole lot more than the 150 innings he pitched this year. Like, I would not be like stunned if it's right around the same amount, maybe a little bit over that. But I think the results wise, you know, he could even stand to maybe throw in some more swing and miss into his game, or try to go for that, or he could stick with what worked this year. Either way, there's nothing in here that's saying to me he's going to regress and have a bad year this coming year. I expect him to do a lot of the same things this coming year that he did last year.
Yeah, 100%. There's no kind of flags that make me go, oh no. I mean, the only question is, how is he going to pitch more innings? Are they going to give him a longer leash this time?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think they might go, okay, we'll give you a 170 cap or like a 175 cap this year? Or do you think they're going to stick quite strict with him? Just because he has had two Tommy John surgeries, basically no one comes back from a third, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to, honestly, I think it's going to, a lot of it's going to come down to what the rotation looks like. You know, do we have enough guys to give him a 2-week sabbatical somewhere? I don't think we're going to, because again, like, hopefully we're going to be in the thick of it towards the end of the season again. So I think it's more likely that we see a, you know, he stubbed his toe and he's out for a week and a half or something, than they like, you know, cutting off the spigot towards the end of the year. So that's the hope. And so with that in mind, I would expect him, I really am expecting him to be around the same, because he doesn't really have in his career, even when he was a starter at a previous location, he doesn't really have the pedigree of going much longer than 150 in the first place. So I don't really feel like there's a huge need to test that, unless the Rays are not getting, you know, steps up from their other starters, or they haven't been able to add additional innings from other places. So it's kind of a qualifier there, but I do not expect a huge uptick. I expect it to be right around the same, unless they're making a playoff push, and in a scenario where they might like to turn off the spigot, they just can't because they don't have the guys performing at a high enough level to get to where they need to go.
Yeah, I can agree with all of that. I hope they do give him a little bit more of a stretch, but even if that stretch is like, hey, we're still pegging you for 150 regular season innings, but we're going to give you 30 innings in the playoffs if we make it there. I think that would that be fair?
I do think so. Yeah, I do think so.
Cool. I mean, easiest A grade of all time?
Very easy. Honestly, if I hadn't already given out my A+, he'd be a very, very, you know, very deserving candidate, but a very easy A. Fantastic performance from Drew this year.
Yeah, congratulations on your A, Drew Rasmussen. We missed you while you were out. Please don't ever get hurt again. We love you.
Please do not. And somewhere you can go that you're never going to have to worry about availability. You're going to always get Drew Rasmussen-like performance at shop.rblarsports.com, where you can go anytime, no availability issue. Shop.rblarsports.com for the best merch inspired by your favorite Tampa sports teams, Rowdies, Bucks, Lightning, Rays, Sun. Some of those individuals and teams in that grouping may need a little extra support right now. There's been some rough waters recently, so go and show some support that way. Shop.rblarsports.com. If you decide to go that route, you can use promo code Flappy to get 10% off your entire order there. FLAPPY, promo code Flappy for 10% off your entire order at shop.rblarsports.com.
Yep. If you get the merch, you'll have a little extra pep in your step. And speaking of peps, Zach Dobb, we're going to go talk about Ryan Pepiot next.
We are. And this is one that is, it's a tough one because objectively, Ryan Pepiot was not bad. He ends the season with a 3.86 ERA. He pitched 167 innings. He ended up with 2 F4, a 4.36 FIP. Those are all respectable numbers. But what I think is making it hard for me to be excited about this year from him is the thing that we said we need to see improved, which is the walks. It did not get any better. It was about the exact same. And that is a and I can't help but be a little bit concerned that maybe this is who Ryan Pepiot is.
Yeah. He effectively put up a very similar season to last year, except he got hit a little bit harder, but managed to pitch a few more innings. He didn't get bit by a spider this year.
So good job.
Which might have been the reason he's a little bit worse. He didn't have those spidey senses because he did get hit quite a bit harder this year than what he did. And, you know, maybe being at Steinbrenner Field affected that a little bit. But only putting up 0.1 extra F4 in 30 more innings is not a good ratio.
No, and I mean, giving up 26 home runs, I think what you're referring to with getting hit a little bit harder, not ideal.
Yeah, not ideal at all.
And you could, and again, we're at Steinbrenner. I feel like this is anecdotal. I don't have his home and away splits. I might be able to find him. But anecdotally, I feel like I remember him getting hammered a little bit more at home than on the road. But definitely the hard contact was up for him this year.
Yeah, and his strikeout rate was down a little bit as well. Lots of concerning things there. I mean, they project that he gave up 2 home runs more than what he would have in the trop.
Well, that's true, but he also did give up 17 home runs at home, 9 on the road. He did pitch about 10 more innings, but obviously that doesn't make up for, you know, 8 more home runs given up. So something about the home cooking just was leading to home runs, which we need to find a way to not have that happen next year.
Yeah. Yeah, hoping we'll get a bit of positive regression when returning to the trop. But yeah, the command was still there'd be times where you'd go, wow, this guy's really something. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I still remember last season, he had the immaculate inning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we thought that when we acquired Ryan Pepiot, he was going to be like the new kind of maybe not the ace of the staff, but like close to it. Like
he was traded for Tyler Glasnow. The comparisons were always obvious there.
Yeah, and we were hoping he would be an upper level rotation piece. Maybe not an ace, but an upper level rotation piece. Now I would say he's kind of falling towards the serviceable major league starter kind of bucket. And all of his under the hood stuff was kind of the same or a bit worse this year. So unless he tweaks something, which would maybe have to be more consistent command, it's hard to project him being better than a serviceable major league starter, which, you know, is fine, but it's not quite what we wanted.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about Steven Matz being in the strike zone a lot. You know, he's in the strike zone about 60% of the time, Matz is. Compare that to Pepio, who, while he was up a little bit from last year in the strike zone, is only in the zone about 53% of the time, which is up from last year. So he was in the zone a little bit more, but it kind of felt like when he was in the zone, he was getting hit. And a lot of that does come back around to another stat that you don't like, which is the home run to fastball ratio, which was up. And anecdotally, like, you could see it. His fastball got hammered multiple times. So that goes back to, again, we talked about this with Taj a bunch. It comes down to location. Brian Pepio has a good fastball when it's located properly. When it is not located properly, it gets annihilated because it is not like – it's not a – crazy velocity fastball, but it plays up well in the zone. When he gets it up there, when he does not, it gets annihilated. And so that's, you know, that is going to be the question for him going into 2026. And I don't know if there's really any way for us to speculate too much on what exactly he's going to be capable of until we see some consistency on location from him and getting things where he needs to. And that, all of that said, he is still a solid three to four guy in your rotation. You're happy with him there. And
yeah,
right now that's exactly where he slots, because as we look towards 2026, right now, it's clearly Drew at the number one. He's your ace. Shane McClanahan, lest we forget, is going to come back, allegedly, hopefully. We hope. We knock on all the wood and all that. He should be back next year. We'll see what he can do as far as replicating some previous performances. But we do expect him back, which would bump Pepio down to the three. And if that's where he is, you know, it's not Tyler Glasnow at his peak, and I think that's the frustration a little bit. But he's still going to be a good three, and we've seen the flashes. Can he find a way to keep those flashes more consistent? That'll be the question.
Yeah, if the worst case scenario is that he is a major league average starter, I think that's all right.
Yeah,
if that's your flaw, we live with that. It's just a shame we're running out of runway to see if there's more.
That's true.
I think next year is going to be a really interesting year for him to see if there's a way he can get that command a little bit better and see if there's a next step for him. I think next year's kind of the last chance to prove that, I think, as a member of the Rays, at least. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah. He's under team control until 2029, which makes him valuable, you know.
Yeah, and I say he's not going anywhere. We'll talk about that later. But he's not in danger of losing his spot on the team by any stretch. But he's just like, I think he's at a point where we're going to find out where his ceiling is pretty soon.
Yeah, and again, we've seen the flashes. So is it still possible that he turns around and he puts up a sub three ERA season? He finds a way to get the control where it needs to be, and we're like, Tyler Glasnow 2.0, it's on the board. But I think right now we can say that that's not the most likely outcome. I think that's kind of where we're going.
Yeah. What would you grade him?
See, it's tough because, again, like, grading him against my expectations, it's like a C. but I don't know that my expectations were fair. So I think I end up like being a solid number three rotation piece that pitches almost 170 innings. I don't think I can, you know, realistically give him lower than a B. Like, he was good. Like, we're complaining a lot about him, but he pitched a bunch of innings and he was not a negative. He was a two war starter who pitched 170 innings. Guys are not
two war is a solid major league contributor, right?
Yeah, which is exactly like, what he was.
Yeah. And he gave the, you know, I think innings pitched are now back in vogue, like as a value. Yeah.
Yes.
And he led the league in, well, not the league. Ooh, he led the team in innings pitched. In a team that does not set itself up around like innings eater types.
Yes. Right.
So that has some value. I think B, maybe B minus is where I fall on it.
Yeah.
Let's be generous. We'll give him a B. Well done, Pep.
Yeah.
Solid job. We know there's more to cut. There's more in the bag for you, but right now you're not showing it.
Yeah, and and you may say, well, you know, he was, you know, based on those stats, a B's harsh, but I think we're also grading him because we know what he can do. We've seen the flashes, and we're hoping to get the best out of him.
Yeah, and like two WAR, that's like a starter you'd go sign for like $13 million a year. Like that's what like Brian Pepiot's putting up what you'd want from like if we signed whoever signs Zach Eflin.
Yes.
Right? That's what they want from him. So, you know, and he's doing it for way less money, I suppose. So there's that.
Yeah. So that kind of brings us to the other Shane in our lives, besides Shane McClanahan, who we mentioned briefly, Shane Boz. A season to forget, I think, for him.
He did everything Pepio did, but to a greater extreme.
And not in the right ways, in the wrong ways.
Yeah. Like, he struck out more guys considerably, but he also walked more guys, gave up more home runs. He was like, had a higher home run to fly ball rate, pitched a bit, threw a bit harder. He like everything. It was just like, imagine if you turned wherever the sliders were leading, you turned them up a little bit more.
Yeah.
From Pepio. That was Shane Boz.
Yeah. And I find myself very disappointed because I had very high hopes for him going into the season. He started off very strong over his first couple of starts, and then had moments throughout the season of really nice stretches, but just had some truly like awful performances as well, mixed in with some good stuff. It was a truly deeply mixed bag from him, and ends up, you know, interestingly enough, and you know, this is a conversation maybe about F war, ends up with the same war as Ryan Pepiot.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, well, that this is a thing about F war because F war really, really, for pitching anyway, really, really heavily relies on FIP.
Yeah.
On fielded independent. And FIP is about your strikeouts as well as your walks, right? So he did walk a lot of guys, but because he struck out a lot of guys, his FIP was, I believe, better than Pepio's.
Yeah, it was. It was a little better.
Yeah.
It's close, but he was better.
Okay, well, actually, they put up very similar FIPs, but his ex-FIP was way better.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
About 20 points lower.
Yeah. So all of that factors into, even though he had a worse ERA and an inning less, same war. But again, they like strikeouts. They like the stuff that's in his in control. Like, Fangraphs really like what's in the pitcher's control. They don't They don't like ground ball pitches as much as strikeout pitches.
Sure. So like, which also goes into, I think, a little bit of that number being so low for Drew, because I think anybody who watched these three pitchers would tell you that Drew Rasmussen was comfortably better than the last two guys we talked about. But despite that, we're looking at a scenario where he was only 0.5 F4 more valuable according to Fangraphs. which I don't think we would agree that he was only half win more valuable than the other two guys.
No, exactly. But again, he didn't strike out as many guys. So
that's interesting. It's interesting. I think the thing that's tough is that, again, you're right. It's a lot of the same conversations we were having about Ryan Pepiot or had with Shane Boz. He is a little bit younger than Pepiot. You know, Pepiot will be going into his age 28 season. Boz will be going into his age 27 season. It's not that big of a difference, but he is a little bit younger. So you do, you know, maybe Boz, you're giving him two more years to try to figure it out, as opposed to, you know, you'd want Ryan to be, you know, separating himself and doing something next year. But also, Ryan was significantly better, I would say, than Shane last year. Now, it is definitely interesting that from a fit perspective, he was getting some bad outcomes, relatively speaking. It will be interesting to see back in the Trop in a more pitcher-friendly ballpark, what does it look like for him this coming season? That maybe that's kind of an optimistic way to look at it, is maybe there's a way that he turns it around a little bit back home. I will say, on the road this last season, he pitched to a 3.86 ERA as opposed to a 5.9 at home, with almost only a two inning difference. So if we want to be charitable and we want to like look for a, hey, like maybe there's a way that this, you know, could turn around next season. FIP as well, a 4.96 FIP relative to a 3.79 FIP home and away. So maybe there is something to that. Maybe there is something to a year back in the Trop out of Steinbrenner. Maybe we see some better outcomes, more in line with what Pepiot did.
Yeah. Yeah. And he needs to never throw the slider ever again.
It needs to be done. The slider has to be done. Like, that's like, he just like, somebody has to sit him down and be like, You cannot do it. You cannot throw it anymore. It just is. It is one of the worst pitches I've ever seen. It just gets annihilated every time.
And he tried to change it to a cutter. Like,
didn't work
mid-season. It didn't work.
Didn't work.
Like, it added a bit of velocity to it, but that also got lit up. So, because the thing about his slider and his cutter is they like look so predictable shape-wise, if you know what I mean. Like, they look exactly what a major league average cutter and slider look like. He doesn't command them that well. He always hangs them. And if you combine his cutter and his slider, he threw that 18% of the time. Which would have been his third most thrown pitch. He just needs to never throw that again. Like, if I look at the heat maps for where his cutter and slider is, there's a big red patch right in the middle of the zone.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
He threw only 82 sliders in 2025. Six of those went for home runs.
Right.
That's awful. That's terrible. like that's terrible. Like, like his four seamer, he gave up eight, but he threw it 1,000 times. Like, you, like, it just can't do it. There's no benefit. Like, there's nothing good. Like, just please. Like, Shane Boz, I know you may be, this may have been a little hurtful, some of the things we've been saying here. I am begging you, please don't throw your slider anymore. Just put it away. It's okay. Your other pitches are good. Just put the slider away, please.
Yeah, he threw the cutter and slider like 480 times and gave up 11 home runs off those.
No bueno.
Which, like, if you put his 2,000 four-seamer and curveball pitches together, it's less home runs. So let's just never throw them again, please.
Yes. So you can throw whatever else you want. Throw a knuckleball. I don't care. Just don't throw the slider anymore.
That said, he put up the same WAR and pitched basically the same innings as Pepiot. He had a higher ERA.
Yes.
He did give up more runs. So what do we grade Shane Boz?
I mean, I think, you know, I think I was going to say C, but I will say, looking at those home and away stats for him, I'm going to give him a C+, with a, like, let's see you back in the trap and see if we get a little bit closer to what we've seen in the past from him. Because this was a, this was out of character, like these performances from him.
Yeah, so, but this was also his first full major league season.
True.
Which, again, you could also use as an argument to say, hey, listen, he was still like adjusting to the league. Now he's learned some stuff. Let's see what he's learned going into next year after a full season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think a C-plus is fair. Potential still exists with him more than I think Pepio. But we'll see. Before we go, we should probably address the elephant, snake, pirate in the room.
There have been some louder rumblings than usual around a couple of moves. One would be I think everyone would be psyched about, which is there's been quite a bit of buzz around the Rays making a move for Ketel Marte of the Diamondbacks. And that package, what we have been hearing, is two starters, probably either Shane Baz or Ryan Pepiot, probably not both. We saw some reporting out there that it was both. I don't think that's accurate. My guess would be a starter and a reliever and a bat of some kind, like a lower level bat of some kind for Ketel Marte, would be my expectation there. And that has been pretty, like, it's been out there for, you know, basically all week. It was kind of out there that was a serious conversation that was going on. So we haven't really heard much as far as moving it forward, like, but we definitely did hear that buzz. So that is in concert with some additional buzz that we have been hearing about Brandon Lau being traded to the Pirates. Nothing confirmed, but we have been hearing more buzz than normal, to the point where I think it's worth at least discussing that, hey, these moves are out there and there is a, you know, there's a decent chance that they happen.
Yeah, I remember we talked about it. Was it last week, Ketel Marte?
We did.
But in kind of a tongue-in-cheek kind of, the Rays could go get Ketel Marte, and then we're like, oh, damn, we actually might. We are currently the leading narrative being reported. Like, the Rays are the leading narrative on the team. Like, the Red Sox and the Tigers are also considered to be, like, in that mix in discussions. But what I think is most interesting is the Diamondbacks GM said at the start of the winter meetings that we don't think we're going to trade him. And then he left the winter meetings going, this week has changed my mind. I think we are going to trade him. And if the Rays are like the leading buzz on that, you go, right, the Rays have made it clear that they've got what it takes. It's just whether or not they'll pull that trigger.
Yeah.
He is the best second baseman in the league. Easily.
Easily.
It's like when you go, Jose Ramirez is the best third baseman in the league. You just go, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah. Like, and again,
it's rare that you have like that much of a clear best at position type player on the market.
Yes.
Right. And on a contract that is completely team friendly in terms of the money being paid for a guy that's going to put up, like, what did he put up last year? Like 4.5 WAR?
I believe so.
Right. And was an MVP finalist.
Got votes.
Yeah. He was third in MVP voting.
4.6 F WAR. Hit to a 145 WRC plus, hit 28 bombs, drove in 72. And again, for a team that underperformed, so you'd think those RBI numbers could easily be up with a little bit better around them. Slugged to a 517 clip, OPSing over 900.
Now, after all we've just said about Shane Baz and Ryan Pepiot, who are like guys that we're not super high on at the moment, to trade two guys that we're not super high on at the moment to get the best in class at a position to make what would be the best infield in baseball easily.
Yeah.
If you put all those together, like Marte, Caminero, Aranda, Diaz, shortstop. Like, easily the best infield in baseball.
Yeah. You can,
build a team around. You've got to do it. The only concern is, one, that would mean Brandon Lau's out the door.
Yeah.
But I don't care if you're getting the best in his position, right? It's like going, oh, damn, it sucks that we let, I don't know, let's say it sucks that we let, who's a corner, an average corner, Mike Yastrzemski go for Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Like, huh? Come on. So while there's an emotional attachment there, you would do that. I think. I don't think anyone would get too sad leaving Brandon Lau behind for Ketel Marte coming in. The one concern I do have,
I would still be sad. I would understand it and I would be like in support of it, but I would still be sad.
Yeah. My one concern is those two guys were your two innings eaters. Like that's like 330 innings.
Yeah, I truly don't think you're trading both. I truly believe it is one of those guys, a reliever, and some other bat, or maybe another arm that they like in the system. I would be surprised if they traded both. And again, as much as we talked about some of the flaws in those guys' game, there have a lot of potential there, and they can be a credible number three starter in your rotation, which is not nothing. With upside, especially, and very controllable, and especially with Pepio, serious upside to be more than that, right? And so that, definitely I think you got to take that into consideration as we're talking about this move. I think it's a more than fair trade. And again, this is where it starts to get a little bit dicey, because as we talk about, the sort of the in concert move, right, of moving Brandon Lau as well, I'm okay with that move as much as I don't like it sitting here in my Brandon Lau jersey. I don't like it, but I understand it. And I agree that it's an upgrade if that move is made. But if you trade Brandon and you don't get Ketel, I'm a lot less excited about that.
Yeah, that's when you're going to really feel it. Because if you move Brandon Lau and don't get Marte, who is your second baseman? Aranda?
Is it Aranda? Is it Palacios? Is there some of the, are any of the guys we talked about in the outfield mix, could they play second? Like that's where you're at.
Mm-hmm. And that makes you, instead of having the best infield in MLB, you kind of go, it's kind of June. It's just, we got some good corner infielders.
Right. And again, you're letting go of 30 home runs, which, you're not going to get from anybody else on the team. That isn't already going to give you, you're not going to go, well, we're going to give Palacios more playing time. He's not going to hit 30 home runs. He might be good. Same thing with Chandler or someone else in the outfield. Could they play some second base? I don't know. It's not them. Like, I think you might be able to get somebody out there to play on the infield. Who knows? But we haven't heard anything. We heard a lot of buzz throughout the week. Since we've hit the weekend, not as much noise about that. So I think at the moment, I'm kind of thinking that we're waiting to see if we can get Ketel before we pull the trigger on anything else. Yeah. And it seems like they haven't been told no, because they haven't made another move.
Yeah. It's waiting and seeing.
Yeah.
You would love to see something happen, but we're just going to have to wait and see. It's something to keep an eye on. I think the Rays, if that opportunity presents itself, if that's real, that the Diamondbacks are willing to take a package that the Rays can afford, you've got to do it. Because the Rays do get a bit skittish, a bit nervous about bringing on name brand players like that. They don't do it very often. I wish they would make a statement. It would really make me feel better about this offseason and this team if they could do that. And if we're losing Brandon Lau, especially that.
And if any moves like that are going to be made, I know that, everybody who's out there watching is going to have some pretty strong opinions on whatever moves are made. And if you've got some strong opinions, which I'm very confident that you do, do us a huge favor and share them with us over on YouTube in the comments, or drop us a comment on Twitter Let us know what you're thinking. If you have enjoyed the show and you want to stick around and hear what our reactions might be if some of these moves happen and what our thoughts are going to be on the rest of the team that we're going to continue to break down throughout the rest of this offseason, as well as previewing them for next season. And then, of course, talking about all those moves that may happen. Please do us a huge favor and drop us a follow or a subscribe or both. Helps us out a bunch. It's free. We really, really appreciate it. And, you know, we've still got a lot of offseason to go, but we have got a lot to talk about with this team. We haven't even really got it into any sort of projection for next year. We're still breaking down some of the guys from last year. Lots to talk about. We've still got a jam-packed offseason for you guys, and we hope you'll stick around with us.
Absolutely. There's still loads to talk about, loads of twists and turns that could be happening. And there's only one place that you want to keep those ears glued to. Do you want to glue your ears to things? If you do, it's the RBLR Rays podcast.
It is. It is. And, you know, we're, I'm just kind of, you know, I was, you know, refreshing the Twitter machine, seeing if anything's coming up. It doesn't seem like anything's going to break today. But when it does break, this is going to be the place you're going to want to be to hear the immediate reaction, because we're going to have strong, especially if Brandon Lau gets moved, you know I'm going to have strong opinions. And we're, and as strong as those opinions may be, it's always still going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.